Hello and welcome to the third episode of the Pop Papa Napcast. I'm your host, TJ Deitch, proprietor of poppapa.com. That's poppapa.com. As always, I'm recording while my daughter Lucy takes a nap. I've been kind of racking my brain a little bit about what to cover this week. In the last episode, I covered most of the weekend, which involved going to New Hampshire and the car trip there and how Lucy's energy kind of expands to the place she's in. We've had a pretty low-key week since then. It's Wednesday right now as I start recording. I will be popping in for the rest of the week and kind of seeing what else comes up. But for right now, I gotta say I've been having kind of a down week. I don't want to get too morose here on the podcast because this actually does help me feel a little bit better doing something like this and getting it out and hoping that people enjoy it. But I don't know, man. I don't know if it's the weather. It's been really gray and gloomy lately, and today it's all windy and might storm soon, and I've just been feeling kind of like I'm in a rut. I don't know if it's just work, which I've been kind of having a little trouble with lately. Not with my bosses or anything, but just like getting the material done. For some reason, it feels like I've just had a real string of kind of tough stories to turn in. And it's not like it's difficult subject matter. It's just, you know, I guess I'm just having trouble putting it back together. And luckily, we've got some really killer editors, so they're really making me shine. But in addition to work, I feel like I've been really slacking off and doing my creative stuff. I've always said, and I say this to anybody who goes into freelance or loses their job, if they're creative people, even if they're doing kind of creative typewriting for their work in freelance, I tell them that it's really important to have like an ongoing side project that you can keep your artistic side going with. And I actually finished a 7-issue comic book miniseries right before I turned 30 back in February. I handwrote the whole thing in a notebook, and I've been slowly going through and typing it up and revising. I realized that I had like 2 extra characters I didn't need, so I've cut them out. And that's really led to the main edits that I'm going through in the second draft. And the process has actually been really fun. Like, every time I sit down and do it, I really enjoy the process, and I'm liking the writing. I keep thinking, like, oh, cool, what's going to happen next? And now that I've got to switch some things up, it's going to be a little bit different, and so it won't be how I expect it, and we'll kind of see where it goes from there. But I'm really just, I've been kind of slogging through my weeks and not really feeling like sitting and typing this stuff up. I don't regret writing it out this way because this actually kind of forces me to do a quicker second draft. I've tried it on other projects where I typed and then I went to handwriting, and that's kind of a bummer because if you're reading through, you've got all the type stuff and then you hit the handwritten stuff and then you've got to type that part up. But I feel like if you do the whole thing this way, it's kind of just part of the process and not like a roadblock. But I am definitely hitting some turbulence getting through with this. I've got the first 4 issues all typed up, so that means I've still got 5, 6, and 7. And it's partly, honestly, just plain old laziness, not wanting to sit on the computer anymore. Partly just things have come up and I haven't been able to do it. And partly I've been really tired lately. I think I mentioned this before, but I used to stay up super late. And now I can barely stay up past 11 anymore. Last night was a rare exception. I stayed up till 12:30 and finally finished a movie I got from Netflix like last Thursday. I watched a little bit Thursday night, fell asleep, watched a little bit Monday night when we got back, or Sunday night, and then I don't even think I stayed up on Monday. And then Tuesday, it's just been really weird. I don't know what the deal is, but so it's just been kind of tough. Like I said, the rut thing, it can be tough, and it can be real. It could just be all imagined. I'm guessing this one's kind of half and half, so I'm trying to really focus and get that going again, and hopefully that'll kind of bolster the rest of it, because I'm just feeling tired, man. A little bit better today. It seems like in the middle of the week I feel better, and then early in the week I don't. It also doesn't help that I get really kind of down and paranoid when I get notes on things, or if people tell me I didn't do something right. Part of that's just because I'm a paranoid person. I kind of assume the worst in those situations. So if there's just a simple note like, oh, you should really read through this and look out for these things, I'm like, oh God, this is like the first step to getting fired, isn't it? And I'm all freaked out for the rest of the week, even though it's not necessary. Part of that's, like I said, because I'm paranoid. But part of it is also because I worked at Wizard. When I worked at Wizard, there was a 6 or 8 month stretch where somebody got fired every Thursday for however long that was. I mean, a lot of people got let go, and it wasn't performance based. It was just okay, we need to cut some more people, so it's you and you. Sometimes it was more than one person. There was a couple days where, like, six or eight people got let go. When I got let go, there was at least two of us. I think maybe one more. So it's just one of those things where, like, I just have, like, some paranoia built into me. And I've talked to some of my fellow former Wizard employees, and a lot of them have the same thing, too. Where, you know, as soon as things go a little bit bad or, like, they get a note on something, it's like, oh, no, here it goes. I'm done. So at least that part's not just me. And, yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of a bummer. I've been feeling down. I hope this whole podcast isn't like this because that sounds really crappy. I do have a couple things in mind that I'm going to get to. Hopefully a more thought-through pop-pop of the week. I definitely have a solid pop-pop seal of approval. A couple new What's New with Luz. And I hope to put up a video of Lucy counting, like I mentioned last week, the kind of spontaneous counting. My wife caught her on her phone doing it in the car. And so she started going up to 15. I heard her go up to 20 one time. It's just really cute. Okay, so for the pop-pop seal of approval, I'm giving it to Play School's line of Sesame Street toys. Now, they've got a whole bunch of different Sesame Street toys. The specific ones I'm talking about, I'm not sure if the actual line has a specific name, but they're like 2-inch tall plastic figures that come in two packs. And there is also a pretty cool playset called the Play School Sesame Street playset. It's crazy, right? I'm going to have links to all this stuff in the show notes over on poppapa.com if you want to check them out and kind of see what I'm talking about. So the way we kind of stumbled upon this toy is that we were in Middletown, which isn't too far from us, but it's not a place that we go to a lot. It's like 20, 30 minutes away on the highway. So we don't go there a ton. But when we do go there, we usually hit up the Babies R Us, the Toys R Us, the Joann Fabrics, the Marsh, you know, all this stuff is all in one kind of strip mall. And after hitting up Babies R Us, my wife remembered that we had a gift card with some money on it for Lucy's birthday or Christmas or something. And so we were kind of looking around, and we saw this playset, and it folds in half. So it looks kind of like a square, and on one side is Mr. Hooper's store from Sesame Street, and on the other side is just one of the door to one of the buildings with the stoop and the whole thing. And that opens up. It's on a hinge, and then inside is, like, the inside of Mr. Hooper's store, and then there's a couple of interiors for, like, Bert and Ernie's room, and then just the inside of kind of a random room. And this is really cool. As a kid, I loved playsets. And they were kind of hard to come by because they were so expensive. They're like $50 a piece. So that was like a prime Christmas or birthday gift. Or if I really saved up my money. A couple of the ones I remember getting was, there was one that they did for the Batman movies that was like this one on hinges, but it actually had three parts that kind of like accordioned out. And so there was like Wayne Manor, the Batcave, and then different aspects of the Batcave and different parts. And then that one was really cool. I think they did that one for Batman Returns and Batman Forever, and maybe again for Batman and Robin. I'm not quite sure, but I know it popped up a few times with a different paint job here and there. I also had a Karate Kid one that was kind of like a dojo with these different things that would pop out that I actually did not know was from Karate Kid until a couple of years ago when I saw an ad for it in a comic book. I thought it was just like Ninja Dojo playset from some random toy line. So that one was really cool. I had another Batcave from, I think, earlier Batman toys where one side was the Batcave, like, all rocky, and I think the other side was just kind of a villain set. So that was really cool. I had a G.I. Joe one, things like that. And so I love playsets. So when we saw this one, grabbed it. And it comes with Elmo, and then there's a Oscar the Grouch that kind of pops up in a garbage can that's pretty cool. And my wife was like, well, maybe we should get some more of the two packs. You know, they're not that expensive. They're like $6. They're on sale. And I was like, I think we'll be fine. I mean, she's not really into toys yet, so maybe this will be enough. Came home. She just kind of looked at it. She was playing with it, like the Elmo figure. She loves Elmo, but like the Elmo figure, and then just kind of like stared at it. And I was like, oh, okay. So I went on Toys R Us and I bought three of the two packs that were on sale. I got Bert and Ernie. I got, I think it's Big Bird and Tully, and then Abby and Zoe doing like skating things, I think. We're kind of spacing them out because they want to give them all to her right away, but she was on a real Bert and Ernie kick one day after watching Sesame Street. So I gave her those two, and she's been loving these guys. And so they're fun for her to play with. They don't move or anything. There's no points of articulation. If you're a toy person, you'll know what that means. There's no joints or anything. So they're just in the positions, and most of them are like waving. And you can just kind of pop them in the windows and play with them. But the great thing is that since they're so small, they're super portable. And so when we went to New Hampshire last weekend, I used them in the car to keep her quiet. My wife handed them to her, and she was just kind of like, oh, friends, Bert, Ernie, Elmo. And she's just kind of looking at them and pointing at their eyes and their nose and their ears and all that kind of stuff, which was great. But even better was when we went out for dinner a couple times, or to eat a couple times, it was like long lines, long waits. And so I could pop out like one of them and just hand it to her and kind of play around with her in the car. And she loved it. So for being both well-made toys, an awesome playset, and super portable, the Play School Sesame Street toys get the Pop-Papa seal of approval. All right, I got Lucy down for another nap. It's Thursday, so it's time to talk Pop-Papa. For what it's worth, I know the previous segment was filled with me not feeling super great, but I am actually feeling pretty good today, and hopefully that is something that will continue on. I took some time yesterday to sit and type up some of the comic book story I've been working on, so that felt good. There was a lot of rewriting in that part, so it wasn't as simple as it has been in the past, but every time I sit down and actually do it, I feel good, and I want to do more of it so that I can be done with it, print it all out, and read it through and make sure it all makes sense. Of course, when things get in the way, like me not being able to stay up late or me being tired, that kind of thing, that puts more space between it. You forget that feeling and you move on. It's like with anything that you like to do that you kind of have to force yourself to do. So, getting there, feeling better. A couple of things I wanted to talk about in this segment. Two things that happened today. One is that I took Lucy to her music class. Now, this is a thing that my wife started doing because she wanted some kind of class activity to do with Lucy on the weekends. And so usually she goes on Saturdays, and that's when I have the house to myself, and I usually do a little cleaning and then head over to the coffee shop and get some writing done. But since we were gone last week traveling, there's a few days during the week that you can go and do makeups. And I always feel like paranoid about doing these because it always seems like, you know, taking myself away from work for that amount of time is going to screw me up somehow. But I mean, to be honest, at the moment, I'm not super swamped with work. I've turned a lot of stuff in and I am just kind of fielding questions, putting things together and turning them in. So I had the time. I got my morning work done. We went. And it was actually really nice. Another reason that I'm not a big fan of going to this class is that I tend to get sick anytime I'm around kids. The problem with being a work-from-home person is that you do not get exposed to germs as much as normal people. I used to go to the coffee shop a lot before Lucy was born, and so that kind of got me more exposed to what was going around, and so I would have a few more antibodies. But seeing as how I don't really leave the house that much, and the only person I see is my wife and my daughter, when we tend to go out with other people, or if there's a lot of kids around, I tend to wind up getting sick. And I hate getting sick. I've been sick two or three times just this winter, and it's been a real pain. So I'm trying to avoid that again. But, you know, if we didn't go today or yesterday, we would have been out that money for that class, and Lucy really likes it. So we went. I actually had a really good time. I think the class goes a little bit too long because Lucy seemed to be getting a little sleepy, and so did a lot of the other kids. But for the most part, you know, it's a nice class. They do different things. The teacher brings out different instruments that they get to play with and, you know, like rhythm sticks and things like that, bongos. And it's really cool to see Lucy interacting with other kids because it's something that she doesn't necessarily get to do all the time. And so I'm always a little bit worried, not worried, maybe curious about how she's going to interact. And she did really well. There was a couple times when she would go over and like take things out of a kid's hand. And I'm like, oh, no. Come on, you got to share. And most of the parents that were there, at least today, were pretty cool. Nobody got, like, upset or anything. Although, my wife has told me that that's happened a few times. And it's understandable. I mean, it's your kid. You want them treated well. But there was one moment that really bummed me out. Lucy really likes the teacher. And a few times she got up from, like, my lap or where we were standing and went over and sat on the teacher's lap. And then there was this other girl who was there, who I think is a little bit older, that was sitting on the teacher's lap. And Lucy went up, I guess from the angle, like maybe she couldn't see that girl. And she got really upset that the teacher was sitting with this other kid. And so she ran over to me and kind of like buried her head on my shoulder. And she didn't cry or anything, but I could tell she wasn't feeling great. And the teacher came over like when she could to, you know, spread the love around. But it reminded me of something that is probably the main thing that I worry about when it comes to her. And that is that I believe nature and nurture are very important and equally important in how a person develops, you know. There's ways that you're set up, your chemicals, all these things. But there's also the way that people treat you and you're treated by your parents, and these things all inform. All of it comes together, mixes together, and informs how you grow up. And we don't really know how everything gets passed down, if it does. And the one thing that I worry about the most is, like, I have some real emotional insecurities about things. I'm not going to get into the why necessarily right now, but, you know, I tend to feel, and I mentioned this in the previous segment, when one little thing goes wrong, I assume a lot of other things go wrong. And I think part of that is because I'm imaginative and I can picture every bad thing that could happen. But it's also, I think there's, you know, chemicals or experience have kind of taught me to be that way. Even if there's a million things that are basically evidence for the opposite of whatever I'm thinking, if there's one thing that's in favor, that one thing takes way more precedence in my brain. And, you know, I also can understand feeling, you know, abandoned and those kinds of feelings. And, you know, you wonder if, like, does my DNA have some kind of trigger or carry over something that makes her more susceptible to those feelings? Because I think everybody has those feelings. It's just how you react to them. And, I mean, after a couple minutes on my shoulder, she got back up and she was smiling and everything was fine. But it was just one of those things where I was like, oh, no, this is how I would react probably in this situation if I got snubbed by somebody that I really liked and thought was a friend, if they were, like, focusing on someone else. And I feel that way all the time. Unfortunately, I am still pretty emotional, and I can be very raw, nerve-wise, when it comes to friends. And it's not anything that they really do, but it's something that I kind of put on myself. So, like I said, it's just something I've been thinking about. I hope it's not something she has to deal with as much, but the positive spin to all this is that I do actually have experience with these feelings. So if she is having trouble, you know, kind of adjusting or moving on from an experience like that, I can kind of help talk her through it because I've been there. So even though it's not necessarily the best way to deal with people and react to people, so at least, you know, the one plus side of me being anxious and worrisome and all that is that I can help her get through it if that does become something that is a problem for her. So I guess that's good. Something else that happened today that's really, really kind of funny, actually, and there will be a picture. If it's not in the photo diary post for this week, I'll post it in the show notes. But I was doing something in the living room, and Lucy had gone to the kitchen table, which is behind me, the way our living room is set up. There's no barrier. It's just behind me. But I was on the computer writing or something, and so I wasn't paying attention. She's got pencils and paper back there that she usually draws with. So I thought nothing of it. And then my mom called on the phone to ask me about something, and I got up and looked over, and she had drawn all over a DVD that she has with a Sharpie marker, this Elmo DVD. She drew all over that with Sharpie. She drew all over the table. She got some on her sassy seat that she sits in to eat sometimes or used to. And, like, all over her hands. It looked like she had prison tattoos on her hands. And I was like, oh, my God. So I'm talking to my mom about the thing she called about and trying to deal with this. But one thing I can say, a tip to parents that might be good to have, is that magic erasers, the Mr. Clean magic erasers sponges, picked everything up immediately. I barely even had to press. I got everything off the table. I got everything off the chair. The part of the seat that you put the plate or the food on, it didn't come off as well there. But I think that's because that's a lot more porous and kind of scratched up from her eating off of it. But everything else, you don't use them on skin or anything, but I was able to wipe some of it off her hands. It's still there. It'll be there for a couple days. I mean, that's just how it works when you use permanent marker. And just to explain why the permanent marker was out, I sold a bunch of comics on eBay, and before going to music class, I figured I could wrap them up, you know, package everything real nice and get that out. And I always use a Sharpie when I write the address down on the box. And I must have just left it and forgotten about it. But I will probably not be doing that again, at least for a while, until I forget this experience and do it again. But I guess that's just what parenting is, isn't it? Just hoping you don't make the same mistake twice, and then when you do, hopefully adding it into your brain so that you'll be less likely to do it again. All right, before getting into the pop-pop of the week and wrapping things up, I did want to say, you know, it's a different day. I'm recording again. I'm actually feeling a lot better. A big part of that is due to actually recording the podcast and kind of talking things out, talking to my wife. And as I mentioned in the previous segment, I talked to my mom. She was the one I was on the phone with when I discovered the Sharpie mess. And we kept talking after I cleaned it up and everything was fine there. And my mom had a really good point about what the kind of anxiousness I get a lot of times every few years with my career and like where I'm at. And it's basically, without getting into details, you know, you can't control everything around you. A lot of people think they can and try to, but it's, you can't. So the best thing that you can do is control how you look at the world and how you take in things. And so she kind of helped me kind of reframe how I was thinking about the events going on and looking at them. And that really helped. And since then, I've actually been pretty productive. I've got all but one of the issues for my comic book done. I started looking online to see if I can find an artist, because that's really the most complicated part. Once I get it edited and together, I've got to get a pitch together and hopefully start getting that out and see if there's any interest. And I also talked to some friends about maybe starting a kind of creative endeavor, which will be fun because we used to work together on some other stuff. So it would be cool if this kind of got together and took off. So I'm definitely feeling better about kind of life and work and all that right now. And a big part of it is just keeping the creative side of my life in balance, doing this podcast and writing and just getting things on track to hopefully be able to show them to people, because that's the biggest thing. Finishing is the hardest part, and then getting it to a point where you can have it polished and ready for other people to look at, you know, that's the hardest part. Because I have a lot of ideas, and I'll stop writing one thing to write another thing because it's fresh, and then I don't go back, and then I've got a lot of unfinished things. So I'm really glad I finished this script, putting it together. This second draft seems to be going pretty well. I'm actually enjoying it as a story, which is good. And I will hopefully, by the end of today, maybe tomorrow, have everything all typed up and ready to read through, so I can kind of get a better sense of what it feels like altogether. I know this podcast only took like a half hour for you to listen to, or 20-something minutes up to this point, and I've kind of gone on a roller coaster, but that's just kind of how it is, you know, with me. It's a little bit of what you can expect moving forward, but probably not as much, at least for a while, with the sad stuff, because I, like I said, I'm feeling better, I'm in a better headspace, and I am moving forward, hopefully. Okay, now moving on. I'm going to give this a spoiler warning. If you haven't read Brian K. Vaughan's Why the Last Man comic book series from Vertigo from a few years back, you might not want to listen to this. I'm not really going to spoil much of the story itself, but the kind of detail that I'm talking about is somewhat of a spoiler for the whole story. So if you want to just skip ahead a little bit, that might be in your best interest. If not, however, I'm going to move on. The comic book I mentioned, Why the Last Man, is about a guy and his pet monkey who survive an apocalypse-like event that takes out every other male on the planet. Not just male humans, but animals, and even the Y chromosome and things die off. The comic book is a real kind of journey thing, and both in the fact that they're constantly traveling, the characters. You've got York Brown. You've got Agent 355, who is the woman, secret agent kind of person who's put in charge of him, and Dr. Mann, who is a scientist who they think can actually, like, maybe help figure out what happened, because she was into doing some cloning experiments and things along those lines. And so they think they might be able to use Yorick's DNA and the monkey's DNA to figure out what happened and maybe take whatever kept them alive and put it on new people, either clones or new births, that kind of thing. And the story is not really about York being a father. The spoiler part is that by the end, they have figured out how to clone. And so he is technically the father of these many children. He's also the biological father of a girl. And the interesting thing about York as a character is he starts off as being like this kind of know-it-all, kind of a douchebag. He's constantly like throwing out movie references and thinking he's really smart. But he doesn't have any life experiences. In fact, they make a point of saying that he's become kind of a shut-in in the beginning of the book. So, literally, he has no experiences aside from the few that he's lived in his own life and the movies and books he's read and the TV he's seen. And York is pretty annoying, actually, in the beginning of the book. You know, he's just constantly talking this self-righteous nonsense of an early 20-something. And I can say that now because I'm 30. And the whole book is a journey for him as a character. And it's not necessarily a journey to fatherhood. Like, that's not necessarily the point of it, but he does become a better man as he kind of goes through life, a better adult, I should say. He learns responsibility. He learns to care for others. He learns about love and loss and you know, highs and lows and all these things. For every victory, there's been a ton of defeats. And he learns about his life and kind of what makes him tick. And I think that's kind of an important journey for everybody to go on. Not necessarily in such a dramatic fashion, of course, but just to kind of like keep an eye on yourself and look at what you're doing. This is something that was very prominent in my house growing up. My mom and dad were always talking about kind of like evaluating what you're doing and seeing where you're going and seeing how that might change and altering directions and that kind of thing. And it's important. It goes back to, you know, Socrates, the unexamined life is not worth living, where you've just got to kind of keep an eye on yourself because other people might, but you're really the one that can truly affect change in yourself. Other people can suggest things and you might take it into consideration, but if you're not looking out for you, then other people might not be looking out for you either. And not in a protective way, but in a how am I doing kind of a way. Am I being the kind of person outwardly that I want to be? Because let's face it, I mean, we can think that we're the greatest person in the world, like York did. York thought he was this worldly genius kid. But I mean, he got into the real world and clearly he was shown that he was not. He became one because he went through all of these things. I think we have to constantly kind of look at how we think we're doing and how we're actually doing and make sure that they kind of jive. Another aspect of the book that we don't find out about until the very end, the last issue, is that Yorick spent... This is another super spoiler, so if you've lasted this long and you don't want another major part spoiled, skip ahead. The entire book, Yorick is looking for his girlfriend Beth, who is in Australia. He proposed to her over the phone right as the event that happened killed all the men, and they got disconnected. So he's been trying to find her. He finally gets to her. Along the way, he actually stays pretty faithful. He does wind up having sex with a woman, and she actually has a baby, a girl. But York doesn't know about it until later. He discovers that he's in love with one of his traveling companions right before she gets killed. And then you kind of assume that he's going to go and be with Beth, the woman that he's been pining for. But instead, now that he's actually found out that he has a daughter, he decides to go and become her father. Actually, like, stays with that mother and raises the kid and lives a life. And I thought that was interesting because, I mean, a lot of people kind of stay together for the kids and that kind of a thing. When I was a kid, I always thought, like, it would just be better to be, you know, for yourself to go, to break it off and go and do your own thing. But, you know, as I've gotten older, maybe a little bit wiser, it's definitely not as easy. I mean, when kids are involved, there's a lot more going on than just two adults getting together. So it was one of those things that I thought was admirable. I had read the story before, but I had forgotten a lot of the details. And I was actually surprised by that one when it was mentioned in the final issue that that's what he had decided to do. I thought that was interesting. It just, you know, again, young York in the beginning of the story wouldn't have done that. He probably would have thought like I used to think and bounced. But instead, being a more adult person who's seen a lot more in the world, he stayed on. Thought that was interesting. Thought that was admirable. And plus, it wound up that his girlfriend wound up dating his sister. So I guess it kind of worked out for everybody in the end. So for being a guy open to change and someone who survived one of the craziest experiences that I've seen in comic books and literature, York Brown earns the Pop Papa of the Week. All right, that's going to wrap everything up. I think this episode's probably a little bit short. Sorry about that. I got recording a little bit late, cutting a little bit later, so everything got a little bit delayed. It's a lot of little bits, but they add up. So I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Pop Papa Napcast. My name's TJ Deitch. Head on over to Pop Papa. That's poppa.com. If you want to check out the website and the photo diaries. If you're interested in seeing my review of Why the Last Man, the last two volumes, that'll be going up on Wednesday on United Monkey. That's United, MONKEE.com. I also have monkeyingaroundthekitchen.com, and that's where I write about the different meals I've cooked and some of the food that we've eaten while going out. And lastly, I am on Twitter at Papa Deitch, PoppaDeitsch. If you want to hit me up there, feel free. Let me know if you have any questions, and have a good week.